He's standing tall as a cypress tree as he waits on a shanty boat named for me. And the fingers of the past reach out for me. They all reach out for me. Shanty boat's calling me home. Shanty boat's calling me home.
Well, that was lovely, actually.
Yes, that was. I have many moods.
The many moods of Dave White.
I do.
Of movies.com.
One of them is a mood that I have for Bonnie Guitar. Do you know her?
I do not.
Bonnie Guitar.
Why don't you first explain what this program is?
I'll get to that.
No, we need to do it first.
Okay. Linoleum Knife is a podcast about the movies that have come out just this week to keep you up to date for parties and office chat. When people say to you, hey, what do you know about the movies? You'll say, I know a lot of things, and I'll tell you them right now because I listen to Linoleum Knife, the podcast about movies.
Well said. Oh.
Hosted by...
We should needlepoint that into a sampler.
Hosted by you. You are Kim Jong-un of therap.com.
And you are Dennis Rodman.
I am Dennis Rodman of the... Actually, it's probably the other way around.
Oh, you get to be Kim Jong-un?
I think I'm more like Kim Jong-un than you are, because...
You're a heartless despot.
I'm a heartless despot. And I have a feeling that he walks around North Korea going, make this happen! Make this happen. Stop it. You do this. No, you
true.
Quit it. Like, that's
still,
kind of what
that
I...
That still leaves me being the Dennis Rodman of the equation, which I don't know that I'm crazy about.
Lip rings, tattoos.
Wedding dresses.
Wedding dresses. I'd say that fits better.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, you are Dave White of movies.com.
And you're Alonzo Duralde of therap.com and also of What the Flick.
Thank you.
The internet television sensation in which... Now there's a whole lot of wipes going on.
Yeah, we've been getting complaints.
There's a whole lot of chopping you guys to pieces.
We're
going to
be
what's
talking,
happening.
Well, basically, you know, on
I
what
mean, I'm not going to complain super hard yet because I know it's like the first time or whatever. But here's a problem.
We have kind of a new producer working on the show. The What the Flick? We used to talk for like 10 minutes, 12 minutes, and they would just run the whole thing. And
it was great because it was lots of full of little digressions,
right.
And personality moments.
And we like
guys,
that.
You guys would banter with each other.
We like
a bit.
That too. The,
it was
the thing
very
is,
casual and informal and
the
relaxed.
Thing is the interview is the internet is too, you know, TLDW. Too long, didn't watch. So
no, I know what
things,
TLDW means.
Things can't
I'm
be,
down with the young people.
All right. Well, things can't be over a certain length, so now they want to make them shorter.
Well, that's fine.
But the thing is
but
that...
let y'all do your thing.
Yeah, we're going to start having a clock out again, which we were doing for a while.
Yeah.
Just so that we know how short it's going to be, so
because
we can still be ourselves. And
you 5 minutes is if you want to do a five-minute show,
no,
great.
It'll be like an 8 or 9 minute
do
show.
Do a five-minute show, but...
We can't, with four people talking, you can't do a five-minute show.
But this new shortened version,
yeah,
it gives... Here's what it does.
It feels like the Cliff Notes.
You guys are going, I liked it. And the other person's... And then it's just... And then someone else is going, me too. And you're like, wait a second. Tell me some things about this. Yeah. There was one that aired this week that Christy was sitting at the table and the edits were such that she barely said two words in the whole 5 minutes.
Well, Ben,
and she's the hot one.
Ben was annoyed that his anal rape joke was cut out of the Oz the Great and Powerful review.
Let the host of Turner Classic Movies make an anal rape joke.
I'm with you on that one. So that, if you're a fan of What the Flick and you thought this week's were a little disconcerting, we hear you loud and clear. we'll be we're going back to the drawing board on that one. We did not know they were.
Do you know that you're going back to the drawing board?
Well, we've discussed it.
Are you the boss now of everything?
No, but the four of us have talked about it. And so collectively, yes, we are the boss of everything.
But this is not What the Flick.
No,
this is Linoleum.
This is
Knife.
Linoleum Knife,
the podcast of the cinemas.
Yes,
with just us.
Right.
Bonnie Guitar.
Bonnie, yes.
As I was about to explain for you, cut Bonnie me Guitar. Off and made me do professional things.
You were the one who said we needed to start being like other podcasts and saying up front what the show is.
You know what? I didn't really mean that.
I see.
I don't really care about being
professional. Oh, that we know.
Bonnie Guitar.
It did seem out of character.
Bonnie Guitar is she's still alive. A country singer who was quite successful in the 40s and 50s and 60s, I guess, too.
So she was around before the movie Johnny Guitar.
Oh, yeah.
I see.
Yeah. And she was born in 1923.
Wow.
She will be 90 years old next week.
Wow.
Yeah. And she was terrific.
Is.
Well, I don't think she sings anymore.
You don't know.
She probably just hangs out with her great-grandchildren. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe she still does sing. Wouldn't that be great if your great-great-grandmother was Bonnie Guitar and you would go to Christmas and she'd be like, hey, kids, want to hear a shanty boat? And they'd be like, yeah, Grandma, sing shanty boat. And she puts a little guitar out and starts singing. That would be a great grandmother to have.
Because nobody, you know, does family like show business people.
Look, I guarantee you there are more happy showbiz families out there than there are some other, you know, non-showbiz families.
No, I'm not saying that
not more, but they, just as
I'm not
many
saying,
good
I'm not
ones
saying they've cornered the market on
well,
good
yeah.
or bad families. Yeah. I'm just, you know,
I don't want to think about her family hating her.
Okay. I didn't say they did. I'm just saying that having her as your grandmother would not necessarily guarantee
if anybody knows Bonnie Guitar personally, and you have bad stories to tell us about her, I never want to hear them. To me, she's lovely.
Fair enough.
All right. Why don't you start talking about movies?
Why don't I? Well, so speaking of Oz, the Great and Powerful, that opened this weekend. I was not looking forward to it because, and I don't blame Disney for this, they're selling it like Alice in Wonderland, which made a whole lot of money,
they were doing that.
And which was terrible.
You know what? I remember sort of half enjoying it when I watched
it.
God,
I hated it.
Since watching it, like, I can come out of a movie like Alice in Wonderland and be like, yeah, that was fine. Like, and knowing that there's a lot of stuff wrong with it, And being annoyed by parts of it and being able to tell you. Like, I remember walking out of Alice in Wonderland and thinking, oh, man, Johnny Depp. Like, yeah. Can he just give it a rest? Just
dial it down.
For a bit. Just a minute. Can you just, like, you own an island or something. Can you just go there for, like, 2 or 3 years? Let me miss you.
Let me miss you.
And I remember that. And I remember thinking, why was there a giant... Why did it all become a war at the end of the movie?
why does she have armor?
Yeah, and so, but because Alice in Wonderland made like $1 billion,
something like that,
like it made like $1 billion, that became the template. Mm-hmm. You know, everything had to look like that and have a war at the end and fantasy fairy tale characters, you know, sort of upended and behaving in ways you weren't thinking of them behaving before. And
is that the movie to blame for all this?
I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, other than you could actually blame it all on Lord of the Rings, I guess, if you really wanted to.
True.
But I everything since Alice in Wonderland has been worse than Alice in Wonderland.
That's true. I'm sure if I went back and saw it now,
yeah,
after everything else we've been subjected to, it would suddenly seem better. But
and I fully understand the fatigue of watching these films where, you know, everything is digital. There are no sets that you could say, you know, someone really is touching that thing.
Right.
you know, there's a battle at the end. They've taken beloved characters, or at least characters that people know.
Familiar, yeah.
And
recontextualized
and distorted them into shapes that are not comfortable anymore. And so I was with you on Oz. I just thought, oh, God, what are they going to do? Because I really love The Wizard of Oz. Not just because it was one of my earliest, you know, film experiences, but because it's a fantastic movie that I've never grown tired of watching. And so I was, you know, not looking forward to this. And I liked it a lot.
I did too.
I almost didn't trust my own self after I watched it, thinking, wait a second, why did I just enjoy myself so much? Because it is guilty of having that look.
Yeah.
Having that everything on a green screen look.
And it does.
It's beautiful, but it does have that look. In fact, Will went to see it. Will and Randall went to see it Friday night. And when he came back, he messaged me and he said, yeah, I felt like I was watching Star. I felt like I was on the Star Tours ride at Disneyland. And I was like, okay. I mean, I can't argue with
you. Yeah, no. You know, and also it's, I think it's time that somebody make a movie with a hero who is thrilled to be a hero. Because I have really had it with the Joseph Campbell reluctant hero thing.
But like, you've had it with that for a long time.
And they keep making them.
They keep doing it, I know.
You know, and so here's another one. But this one felt different because rather than become this other person, like the fact that he is a con artist and a faker and a stagecraft, like the whole nature of magic is distraction. You know, look over there while I do this. All that stuff is what he relies upon, you know, to save his bacon in this movie. And so yeah. I kind of liked that he didn't have to become all great and noble, that he really just sort of took his skills as a charlatan to like a much larger level, you know.
I'm hearing people complain that they feel he was miscast, and I don't really feel that he was.
Me neither. I've been hearing that a lot like too.
He came off as unassuming and shifty.
Well, yeah,
which is what I think he is supposed to be.
Yeah, if you want him to be Harold Hill in The Music Man, you're not getting that.
Right.
You are not getting the big,
you're getting broad James Franco.
Yeah, you're getting James Franco. You're not even getting like Ferris Bueller, you know.
Right.
But
he doesn't have the gleam in his eye
right.
of the charlatan that you normally think of them as having.
He's more like the guy playing like three card Monty on the streets of Brooklyn.
Well, what his character really is a skirt chaser.
Yeah.
And a con man kind of second. Like his profession allows him to go from town to town to hook up with chicks.
True.
And so
he's a seducer.
And they don't go very far or deep into that aspect of his personality because it is a PG rated family film.
Right.
But, you know, he's a ladies man and, you know, he's good looking. He's James Franco. But in the movie starts with him being sort of like chased out of town by cuckolded men, you know.
Well, yeah, it's funny. The one mistake that he makes is rather than merely seduce the local gals and then leave town, is that he's also seducing other women in the traveling carnival that he's in, and that's his mistake.
Right. And so I don't really feel like he is miscast. I feel like he's sort of like a kind of lazy, you know,
hedonist,
shifty kind of guy, yeah. and but not in that sort of I'm committed to the big scam kind right. of.
That's true. That's true.
And that I was fine with him in the film. I'm fine with all the casting because I really do. You know, I think Mila Kunis is has a kind of dirty girl kind of face that I know.
I know exactly what you mean.
Could become an evil person.
Sure.
And Rachel Weisz is very sort of like imperious when she needs to be.
Yeah,
like, and so she's a good witch.
She could totally be
good at being an evil witch.
Yeah, you could totally see her like if they did, you know, yet another one of those Snow White movies. Yeah. Like she would be the perfect sort of evil
Michelle witch. Williams is a great Glinda because she in general carries around this sort of aura of goodness and sweetness. I don't think I've ever seen a movie, and I'll probably be told otherwise the minute I say this, but I always think of her as being sort of the good person in the film that she's in, whatever film she's in. Now, granted, the most memorable films for me that she is in involve her, you know,
suffering
through something. Mm-hmm. Brokeback Mountain,
My Week with Marilyn,
Wendy and Lucy.
Yeah.
Even Meek's Cutoff, where she is tough as nails, but is one of the good people in the group.
She's a good person, but does not have to suffer in The Station Agent.
Right. Yeah. And so I, and here was something else that I thought, this has nothing to do with the movie, but you know how there was an interview once years ago where Julianne Moore was talking about how she had adopted the idea of one for me, one for them.
Right.
One art house indie thing that was invariably with Todd Haynes.
Or Bart Freundlich.
Or her husband, yeah. And one big studio thing to you know, pay the bills.
Sure.
Julianne Moore has abandoned that idea, first of all. Let's just get her out of the way here.
It's all for them now?
It's all now. The one for them and one for me people now are James Franco and... Yeah. And Michelle Williams.
That's true.
As I was watching the movie, I thought, okay, you just made Interior Leather Bar.
Yeah.
And you were in a minimalist Western anti-war allegory film.
He was just at Sundance with two like sexually explicit films. And I remember thinking, you've got a Disney movie coming out in like 2 months. And yeah, she was in Meek's Cutoff, a movie that got so little attention that when she was at the Spirit Awards for My Week with Marilyn,
yes.
I think it was like Leonard Maltin or somebody asked her about it, and she said, no one else has even mentioned that movie today. At the Spirit Awards.
That blows my mind, because, I mean, that was a film by Kelly Reichardt. Yeah. I don't know how you say her last name.
Not sure
either. An amazing film that, if you want to know how good it is, go read Rex Reed's review. And then whatever he says,
the opposite,
you understand that is the opposite of what it really is.
I didn't love it as much as you did, and I didn't love it as much as Wendy and Lucy, but it is a terrific movie, and she's extraordinary in it.
Yeah, it's an incredible film. Now, again, like I said at the very beginning, a minimalist Western. I mean, seriously.
Almost a silent movie.
Barely any dialogue. Long scenes of wagon dreams.
Okay,
we're going to get back to Oz just now. Okay, calm down. Calm down. We're getting there.
Because we both liked it. And I don't want it to seem like that we're straying just because we have one or something else to talk about.
Here's why I really like this. I like Sam Raimi in charge of it.
Sure.
I like his sort of playfulness. And no, I know Evil Dead and blah, blah, blah. And he's the master of horror,
there's a piece
are all complaining, oh, he traded in his soul for this. He did not.
There's a piece on CriticWire that actually, it's like I think Matt Singer wrote it. I think it's 10 reasons why Oz the Great and Powerful and Army of Darkness are the same movie.
I already know what that article says.
Because it's about a guy going to another place and having to assemble a thing. You know?
Right.
So it's
my boomstick.
Exactly. Yeah. So it very much, in a way, really, Raimi is keeping it true to his own aesthetic.
Yes. And
I'll put a link to that article on our Facebook page.
I loved how this battle at the end, there was a battle, the three witches are all fighting each other, and the people of Oz are having to fight the two bad witches.
Right.
And I just want to say this right now. It is not a spoiler to tell you that Mila Kunis becomes the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah, it's one of the posters.
It is not a spoiler.
I couldn't get
that
either.
Nothing but complaints from people. Why'd you tell us that Mila Kunis is the Wicked Witch? Because it's everywhere.
It's on a poster. I was at the Grove. One of the posters for the movie is her in the green makeup in the black dress. It's like, how did this become a secret? It's like somebody tweeted that, you know, we went out of our way to not do the spoiler for Dark Skies. And the guy was like, it's in the trailer.
Well, I didn't see the trailer for Dark Skies. But you can't not have seen the trailer for Oz.
Yeah.
And so the, what I love about the battle is that, you know, they become inventive rather than warlike.
Exactly. Well, it's like I was saying.
And
it plays to his strengths.
Yeah, they use what you know about him through this film and what you know about the good people of Oz and how they would respond to, you know, a war being thrust upon them.
Right.
They would not want to be in a war. They would prefer to, you know, send the Lollipop Guild after them with some sort of thing that involves lollipops. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's nonviolent. They don't. They certainly won't. It's stated up front. Like, they're not going to kill anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so yeah, so it's all about like feints and defenses and, you know, distraction. Again, it's magic. You know. And because of the timing of when this is, you know, because this is taking place like, what, 20 years before The Wizard of Oz?
Something like that, yeah.
You know, so it times out that he has access to the tricks of early motion pictures at his disposal.
Yes.
And so in a way, the movie kind of winds up, you know, not to the level of something like Holy Motors, but it is a Valentine to movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which also Raimi indulges in by making the film so visually extraordinary. You know, he does the thing where, you know, Kansas is black and white and Oz is in color. But he also goes from like the old Academy, you know, like 1.33:1 ratio to the widescreen, to the, you know, anamorphic 16.9. And
square box versus envelope.
Yes. Yeah. And kind of cheats out the sides of the of the Academy ratio, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed myself, and I thought the China doll was really moving. Mm-hmm. She not only was she really well narrated, but the voice performance by Joey King, who was the little Ramona in Ramona and Beezus. I'm sure most of our listeners have seen Ramona and Beezus.
We certainly did.
We did, and the she was great, and
the talking monkey
really
the,
she had this sadness, and it was very moving, and the talking monkey voiced by Zach Braff,
these two really great digital characters who actually convey emotion, and they're funny, and they interact well with the actors. Like, it wasn't just watching like James Franco talk to a tennis ball. It really, there's a sense of
that's
them,
what he was talking
exactly
to.
But there's a sense of presence of them being there and mattering, and I was really impressed by that. I mean, I get why, like, the people who really know the Frank Baum books are kind of annoyed by this, because apparently the Baum series all revolve around women. Like, his wife and mother-in-law were apparently like suffragettes and early feminists, and you know, so these were all about, you know, women's stories and women, you know, conquering and that kind of thing. And the 1939 film obviously centers around Dorothy and her, you know, her arc, whatever. So to center this movie around a guy, a lot of people are, you know, like, you know, Manola was talking about how, you know, the witches are sort of ancillary and how it's really about his story, blah, blah, blah. And I get that, and it's fine, but, you know, I don't think that making a prequel about this character is inherently a bad idea.
And they're gonna make Wicked.
Exactly.
They're gonna make Wicked.
You know, and so even if the female characters are secondary here, admittedly, I don't think that it's a big spit in the face to this, you know, creation, you know, to make this character be the central guy. I mean, yes, in the grander scheme of things, I know there aren't enough female protagonists.
Yes.
Whatever. But if you're going to make this movie has been made very well.
Yes. Let's move it along, because we have approximately 30 minutes.
I know.
And we don't have any mail this week, so that's fine.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to look. We might.
Well,
yeah. Sorry. Next week we'll catch up. I promise.
So what else? Do we have to go back and talk about Stoker?
Well, let's talk about Stoker. Yes, we didn't do it last week because you hadn't seen it yet. Even after you saw it, you weren't quite sure what you thought. What have you come up with?
I like it.
I knew you would. Yeah. I knew you would.
I like...
Why don't you explain what it's about, since you saw it more recently than I did?
The family's name is Stoker, and mom is Nicole Kidman. And she isn't nice. She's got one look on her face, partially because that's the number of expressions Nicole Kidman has now. But also because that's the number of expressions this character has. It's sort of like, grimace, you know, and her daughter Mia Wasikowska is even less happy than mom. Now, dad just died. Dad is Dermot Mulroney, and he has died under mysterious circumstances
on the daughter's 18th birthday.
On India, the daughter's name is India, on India's 18th birthday. All of a sudden, Uncle Charlie shows up, played by Matthew Good, G-O-O-D-E, Good.
He was Ozymandias in the Watchmen movie. Yeah.
And he suddenly becomes very, very important in the house. He starts having a sort of slinky affair with mom. And he may be trying to seduce India, too. We know that he's not up to good, really. But we don't know exactly what he's up to. Meanwhile, India is sort of a... In my review on movies.com, I called her a teen ghost. Because she is sort of sullen-faced. She collects dead birds that she has hunted with her late father. She lets spiders crawl on her body whenever they happen to show up her skirt and whatever.
She has every pair of shoes she's ever worn.
Owned, and it's all the same.
They're all saddle Oxfords.
Yeah, they're all saddle Oxfords, and they're all, you know, the sizes that she wore from one year to the next. And they are a very strange family in a really, really, really gorgeous big house. They've got some money. Yeah. And as far as the plot goes, it's essentially a who's going to kill everyone next? Or rather, who's going to be the first one to kill everyone else in the movie? That's basically the plot of the film. It's very Hitchcocky in that way. And
not being any good.
Park Chan-wook. Park Chan-wook has sort of taken this Hitchcock template and turned it very Korean with an American cast. And so it's this very strange thing offered up to you. It's very quiet. It's every frame of this film is composed impeccably. There's not a lot going on in terms of does it mean anything, but it's just weird enough and just beautiful enough and just goofy enough and just perverted enough to keep you interested. I was never bored. It's not anywhere near as extravagant or histrionic or crazy as Kim Ki-young's The Housekeeper, if you recall. Yes, when we saw that.
The 50s one. It was remade, which we need to see the new one.
That's not my DVD recommendation of the week, but if you can find The Housekeeper, the old one from the 50s,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness, please go watch it. It is out of control.
Here's the thing. I think if Stoker had been in Korean, I would have been more inclined to forgive its excesses.
Yes.
And its sort of significant pauses of,
yes,
of you know, information that's not being shared yet. And, you know, in English, it struck me as ridiculous.
Well, there is an element of ridiculousness to it. And for me, there were a lot of scenes that I found very funny. And I feel like he was playing that line. Like he was walking that line between arch and funny.
The screenplay is by Wentworth Miller, the actor making his writing debut.
And I think he handed it over to Park Chan-wook and was like, all right, do what you want.
Right,
you made Old Boy.
Okay, but here's my question. Do you think that Park Chan-wook sort of turned that script into the kind of thing he would have done?
Yes.
Or was it just a dumb script that he just did as artfully as possible?
I think he took that script and was like, I know what movie I want to make out of this. And Wentworth Miller, I guarantee you, was like, sure, you're Park Chan-wook. Yeah, because, dude, he's made some of the coolest movies of the past decade. Old Boy is a masterpiece. Old Boy is a masterpiece. And there's an element of that Old Boy style revenge in this film. Obviously, it's nowhere near as rad as Old Boy. But it is definitely a weird little movie that, you know what? I'll take that any day.
I would say this. If you have not seen any of his Korean films, see Old Boy, see Thirst, see Sympathy for Lady Vengeance before you see Stoker. Because I think if you come into Stoker cold, it's just going to be monstrously inane, and you'll be like, what is going on here? You know, why are people behaving like this? Why is the plot so stupid? Why is this so over-art-directed, you know? And I still think it's stupid and over-art-directed, but I at least get where he's coming from, but I don't think it works. And I think, again, I think maybe, like, if you're German and you've seen all of his films with German subtitles and you see this one with German subtitles, I'm sure it will all feel like it's of a piece. But I think for American audiences, even American audiences who like this director and admire what he's doing, doing it in English makes it weird and just not, it doesn't scan. It'd be like if you tried to set Uncle Boonmi, who can see his past lives, in Kentucky. You know, I think that would be a real challenge.
I want David Gordon Green. to go to Louisville or Lexington or somewhere out in the boondocks.
Owensboro.
And remake Uncle Boonmi with a cast of unknown non-acting Hicks.
Well, he's got to remake Suspiria first, but maybe he can put that on the list.
I misspoke. I kept saying The Housekeeper.
Uh-huh.
The Housemaid.
The Housemaid.
The Housemaid.
Okay.
1960 movie, Korean movie by Kim Ki-young.
Is it on DVD?
It is.
On like region 5?
It is hard to find on DVD. But seriously, do you care about things that are amazing and awesome and perfect? Go hunt it down.
We need
even
to see
if
the
you
remake.
Have to watch it on YouTube, and I bet it's on YouTube.
True. Yeah.
I just learned that Viva L'Amour is on all of it. Is on YouTube. So my chiming Lang, you know,
right?
Hyperactive, excited to tell you all about it.
That you got the plot wrong.
That I got the plot wrong and was completely unavailable. It's all on YouTube.
Okay.
All of it.
Okay.
So you know what? Even if you have to go watch it the way you're not supposed to watch a film on YouTube.
Look,
go watch
it. If it were available,
we were super lucky.
Would not endorse it.
We were super lucky. We got to see The Housemaid at UCLA on a screen.
Yeah. It's played actually a couple of times because, like I said, there was a remake a few years ago, and I think at AFI or whatever.
I haven't seen the remake.
They showed both versions.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah. All right, moving on. The ABC.
So you don't like Stoker?
I don't.
I like it. It is perverse.
It is beautiful. I grant you, yeah. It is art directed.
And I'm really into Mia Wasikowska in this film. She's I'm down for that girl.
I like her generally. Yeah. I thought the whole movie. I felt like she was doing what Jennifer Jason Leigh does to Katherine Hepburn in The Hudsucker Proxy. Mia Wasikowska does to Jennifer Jason Leigh in Stoker.
And if you see Stoker and you know what Harmony Korine looks like. Blink and you will miss him as a high school art teacher.
And next week we'll be talking about Spring Breakers.
That's right.
You'll want to tune in for that one.
Spring Humpers.
We haven't seen it yet, but if history is any gauge, Dave will love it and I will despise it. Because that's how we feel about Harmony Korine. Anyway, ABCs of Death.
All right. I'm not even going to try to say the name of the guy who made a Serbian film. It's Serban Subjunk.
It's all consonants.
Show. Yeah. His first name has like 5 consonants in a row. Mm-hmm. In it. I cannot pronounce his name. He made a movie. He made one of the shorts. And there are 26 or 7, 28 directors 20, and 26 shorts in ABCs of Death. The overwhelming majority of them are tedious or trite, or
gimmicky.
Think that they're transgressive and are just simply not. But I liked his. It was called R is for Removed. It is about a man whose skin is being slowly flayed away and turned into film stock, and his revenge as he breaks free of his captivity and, you know, kills everyone in his path.
Serdian Spasojevic?
Yeah. And at the end, the sky opens up and rains blood. Very cool.
That was one of the better ones.
It is in tone and mood, a retreat from the repulsive and vile, like, artlessness of a Serbian film, and makes me feel like maybe he's got something more subtle to do in his maybe next feature. And then before Ars Removed, a Japanese director whose name I cannot remember, right off the top of my head, made one called L is for Libido, which essentially takes all of the nastiest parts of a Serbian film and turns it into a weird, fetishy music video. It's terrible.
Yeah.
My favorite one is F is for Fart. Because it's...
We mocked you on What the
Fuck. I know you did. I saw the clip. I saw you mocking me. Because it's crazy.
It commits itself in a loony way.
Fully to its subject matter.
Hideous.
And it's about a Japanese schoolgirl who is obsessed with her beautiful young teacher's flatulence and how the world ends because of the farts. and how they end up in a cocoon of farty love and die. I also liked the guy from Metalocalypse's W is for WTF.
That was terrible.
Because it looked like a Death Clock video. Ugh. And that's
why I liked it.
I didn't like much else.
Had he animated it, I think I may have gone there with you.
About 50% of it was animated.
But it was clumsily animated on top of live action stuff and intentionally clumsy, but... It annoyed me. I liked the first three. I thought ABC.
A is for Apocalypse is good. Yeah.
B is for Bigfoot and C is for Cycle.
C is for Cycle. I like that one too.
I liked Q is for Quack. I liked K is for Klutz.
I didn't like Klutz. I'm not super into the whole like the poop is attacking me stuff.
But it was better than T is for Toilet.
Well, yeah.
And I liked P is for Pressure.
I wasn't into that one.
Really? Yeah. Okay. But for the most part, this was.
It's entirely subjective. Clearly.
Yeah. But there's not I don't know anybody who's liked more than about five or six of these.
Right.
So, out of 26 shorts, it's not a particularly good proportion.
It's available on demand. That is the way I suggest you see it. I do not think you ought to go see it in the movie theater.
No.
I'm sorry, CineFamily. I know they're screening it this week.
Just so as not to have to sit in the dark with other people who wanted to see this movie.
The thing is that it deserves to be fast forwarded.
Well, that too, yeah.
And so, and if you go to its Wikipedia page, it explains every single
letter.
So you can know in advance which ones you want to watch.
Dead Man Down.
Isabelle Huppert rhymes with Tupperware.
That was pretty brilliant.
I don't. What is this even? What is this movie about? I know what it's about. I'm seeing it in my head right now.
There are two movies going on here that don't.
There's more than two.
Well, there's at least two movies, yeah. None of which intersect particularly well. But the main two are one, Colin Farrell will destroy the mob from within for revenge.
Yes.
And movie two is Colin Farrell is damaged. And Naomi Rapace is damaged, and they might fall in love, or she just might get him to conduct an honor killing for her.
She's blackmailing
him. Yes.
I'm blackmailing you, and yet also we are falling in love.
Yes. Because I'm so hideously scarred, except that I'm still gorgeous.
She has the hottest decorative face scars.
Since Seal.
Like, you would see, if you saw Naomi Rapace in public, dressed the way she dresses in, like, you know, hot clothes, and you saw these little, delicate little red streaks decorating her forehead and side of her face, you would just be like, oh, you look real cool like that. Like, you know, like maybe you would put some blushy makeup on the scars to make them pop, you know.
or even if you like, if you were all messed up behind it and wanted to like hide them, you know, you she's a beautician, you know, do some Veronica Lake, you know, like hair over one side of the face.
She's the worst beautician ever.
The worst.
She plucks everyone's eyebrows out fully.
Okay, like part of the movie is, oh, you know, I couldn't work anymore because I'm so hideously scarred.
No, you can't work anymore because you're terrible at your job.
But then she goes back to work, and it's like, well...
Well, clearly whoever hired her was, they didn't know what they were doing.
I'm just saying, though, there's no transition of, oh, now I can work again. It just, bam, happens, you know. Yeah. Meanwhile, Colin Farrell, like, knows all, sees all, is listening to everybody's phone conversations and is sending them puzzle pieces in the mail.
He's got a whole command center in this hidden room where... Yeah. He's, you know, watching everyone's move, every move, and like he even knows when he drives the truck into the house where they've kidnapped Noemi Rapace, and at the end, you know, they get her in the house, and he drives a truck right into the house. You're like, well, he obviously knows where they're keeping her because otherwise he would have run her over.
Yeah, if she'd been in the basement, too bad. You know. Oh God! And then like,
it is a crazy movie that is completely illogical. A completely gun and violence crazed, yet also wants to be a sort of like indie kind of romance film.
Like sort of John Cassavetes, you know, broken
it's
people
got,
find
and it's
love
got
movie.
Isabel Huppert in it as Noemi Rapace's near deaf mother who is obsessed with Tupperware.
There are several conversations about Tupperware.
There's an entire subplot of Isabel Huppert nagging people to give her back the Tupperware that she has given them.
That she put food in for, yeah.
People think that they get the free Tupperware with the cookies. I don't know why people think that. I want my Tupperware back.
And then there's like, you know, what's his name? Terrence Howard as the whispering mobster.
The farther away I get from this film, the more I love it and want everyone to see it because it's bananas.
Well, it's kind of like, yeah, there are moments of crazy pantsness to it. I was watching think, what is going on? But it's sort of like, I remember I had a boss when I was at The Advocate who never watched South Park.
Right.
But he would always ask me, like, what happened.
Right.
Because he said, it's much funnier hearing you explain it than to actually sit through the entire episode. So I think it's one of those movies that it's funnier in the telling or in the thinking about than actually sitting through.
People say that to me with some frequency. They'll say, I read the reviews. And if you've written about a movie that's especially bad, your review is funnier and more entertaining than the film itself. And I always say to myself, I always say back to them, no. I'm merely telling you the way that you should watch this movie. Because when I saw this movie, this is how I felt. The movie did this. Mm. The movie. I'm just reporting to you what the movie did to me.
Right.
And if you go see it, And you believe me when I tell you about this film, you too will have the same awesome time that
I had
this terrifically crazy, terrible movie.
A lot of times these movies, and I would include this one as one of them, have these sort of highlights of crazy that are funny to talk about later, but in between them there's a bunch of scenes of people milling about doing plot things and shooting at each other. And, you know, you have to listen to Dominic Cooper talk about his family life.
The shootings are just really nice cream in the Oreo.
Well, anyway, yeah. This movie is... I think this movie is more fun to talk about than it is to actually sit through.
I had a good time sitting through it.
All right.
It's not good.
No.
But it sure is weird. And and all... It is telling, I think, to me that Nils Arden Oplev, I don't know how to say his name.
He directed the original Swedish director, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
That this is an American film by... A person that is not American, and like that sort of Euro dream of what an American action film is. This sort of like, and now this is going to happen, and they're going to come in guns blazing, and And now, but I'm going to put Isabelle Huppert in this film because she's Isabelle Huppert. Why would you not want her in this film? Why would you not want Isabelle Huppert in every film? You know,
it's funny because I was watching her thinking, what is she thinking? Like I remember like interviewing Catherine Deneuve
about getting paid.
Well, exactly. I remember interviewing Catherine Deneuve about like why she never works in America, and she was right. All like, yeah, whatever. You know, and she came over and did Hustle, and that was it.
She didn't care.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, if you're Isabelle Huppert, you've been in Heaven's Gate. You don't care anymore. All nuts, you know. No. So just, whatever. She'll do it.
Right.
Also this week, well, we're going to talk about Beyond the Hills next time because Dave's going to see it.
Yes.
It is the first movie in maybe ever in my career as a critic that stumped me.
Can we save the Michel Gondry movie until for next week until I see that too?
Are you going to watch it?
I would like to.
All right. Well, then next week we'll also talk about The We and the I, which is Michel Gondry.
I mean, I'm not reviewing it for the site, but I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, no, I watched it for this one. Yeah. Anyway, Beyond the Hills, I'm still not even really sure what I think of it. And so I'm really looking forward to talking to you about it.
I can't wait.
Because it's from the guy who directed
I'm seeing it this week.
Okay, it's from the director of 4 weeks, 3 months. Four months, three weeks, and two days. Which was my favorite film of 2007.
2000 whatever.
Yeah. You know, movie I really loved. And this one I find really fascinating, but it's different. And I don't know, I literally can't wrap my head around it. So we'll talk. Is that it? Is that everything?
Yes.
Goodness, okay.
Yes.
DVDs.
Mine is a documentary called The Cool School. And it is the story of how the Los Angeles modern art scene took off. So you've got, you know, it's really the story of the Ferris Gallery. Which was a very influential art gallery that opened in Los Angeles mid-century. And you've got, you know, all these characters like Ed Kleinholtz and Ed Ruscha and Ed Moses and Robert Irwin, all these people who, you know, made Los Angeles not just the afterthought of the New York art world, but its own distinct
scene,
yeah.
Is this a movie that's interesting for people who are not already inclined to be interested in modern art?
I don't know. I didn't watch it with anybody else. I watched it alone. If you don't like art, then piss off. Go watch something else.
I think, for example, what's the movie about the Herb and...
Urban Dorothy.
Urban Dorothy is an interesting movie, even if you're not interested in art, just because of their story.
Well, they are. The Herb and Dorothy documentary is a really interesting documentary, just because they were such unusual people.
Exactly.
This is a straightforward sort of like this awesome thing that happened in Los Angeles before you got to Los Angeles. And while no one was paying attention, you know, while the world was ignoring it, this cool. I'm sorry, hence the title. This awesome thing was bubbling up and making itself, you know, its fingers were, you know, eventually pushing other stuff forward.
Sure.
And so it's a cool history lesson.
Okay.
But no, I mean, it's not the Herman Dorothy documentary, because first of all, they're adorable. And he just passed away.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, does it offer something if you aren't going in already inclined to care about the subject? Does it?
If you are not inclined to care about the subject, no.
Well, some documentaries, I mean, like, I don't care about basketball, and I love Hoop Dreams. I mean,
I guess here's what I'm trying to say. If you are a person who likes to learn new things about your world, yes, you'll find this interesting. It's a well-made documentary. And it's on Amazon Instant Video right now.
Okay.
And it's also on DVD. If you don't give two rats' asses about art on any level, well, no, you don't want to watch this movie because you're a terrible person. Because if you don't care about stuff, then you're dumb.
There's no space in between.
There is no space in between. You either care about things or you don't. You're either interested in the world or you aren't. Fine. And so,
All right. The Cool School. thank you, Dave White.
Yeah. And it's not difficult or miserable or what was the word that was
challenging? I forget.
Yeah.
So this is Dave's mainstream DVD pick of the week.
Yes.
Mine is actually a movie I haven't seen, but I'm very excited to finally get to see it. It is Luis Buñuel's Tristana. It is the second film that he made with Catherine Deneuve following Belle de Jour. And she plays that favorite Buñuel character, an innocent young virgin who was seduced by an older man, and then eventually she turns around and takes the long game and destroys him.
Which is sort of like Stoker, if you think about it.
Sort of, yeah. Only not stupid, probably. So that's out. Very excited to check it out. Next week's show you do not want to miss. We will be talking about Spring Breakers. We'll be talking about the incredible Burt Wonderstone and the long-awaited Halle Berry masterpiece, Dat Wig.
Wednesday night.
Yes.
We see Dat Wig Wednesday night.
Some call it The Call.
I came up with a good idea for a movie before we went on. We just put the record button on.
What's that?
Weekend at Gigi's.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I'm not a screenwriter, so I want a screenwriter in the audience to get to work on Weekend at Gigi's. Mm-hmm. It's based on our friend Aaron's Facebook wall this morning, where our friend Nat posted a picture of Gigi Allen on the floor, slumped over in between two nearly naked women who were holding a big bottle of booze. In this photo, you cannot tell if Gigi is yet dead, although he is dead now. You cannot tell if he is dead or still alive because he's completely, out of it. Yeah. And so I think there's a great movie in this where nearly nude stripper looking, dirty, dirty looking women pick him up and carry him around on a weekend of adventures. Nobody yet knowing yet if Gigi is a dead or alive.
Well, you should pitch this to Todd Phillips. Because
Todd Phillips, who hated the Gigi Allen documentary.
Yes, and then went on to make the Hangover movies. Yeah.
I want Weekend at Gigi's.
It would bring both of those aesthetics together.
I would watch Weekend at Gigi's a lot, many times, if it were written and directed properly by the right people. So somebody get on that. I just gave you an amazing idea.
Who's your dream casting for Gigi Allen? For Gigi Allen's possible corpse?
The corpse of Gigi Allen. The actual corpse of Gigi Allen.
It would need to be fresher. Because
I don't think so. I think that he did enough drugs and alcohol in his life that he's actually probably still preserved.
Like Hugo Chavez?
Wherever he is, yes. So Weekend at Hugo's would be almost as good, but Weekend at Gigi's would be the best.
I need to show you a segment that was on Rachel Maddow this week where did you know that the preserved corpse of Jeremy Bentham sits in a cabinet at London College?
Oh, yes. I didn't know that when I was in London or I would have gone to see it.
His head used to rest at his feet.
I know.
But they finally decided that was not classy, so they moved it, but he has a wax head on his corpse now.
I don't think classy should get in the way of great. Hence, Weekend at Gigi's.
Maybe it could be a buddy comedy with Jeremy Bentham's corpse and Gigi Allen's corpse.
I don't think those two would have ever met.
And they solve, that's why they're the opposites attract, and they solve mysteries. As always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this program at iTunes for free, and leave us a review there. It helps us a lot, and we appreciate it, and it gets new listeners, ideally, turned on to the show. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio and at thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, at LinoleumCast. You can also follow us individually. I'm at A. Duraldi, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E. And Dave is at D. Leland White. You can check into the show at getglue.com. And please drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. I do almost always remember to check the emails before we do the show. Send us your top 10 list. Send us questions, comments, anything you would like to share. And Oh, there's something else. Oh, yeah. Two things. One, if you are an Amazon purchaser, go to our Facebook page and click on like one of our DVD recommendations. You don't have to buy that DVD, but if you use that as your entry into Amazon, we do wind up getting a kickback on whatever purchase that you do make.
Oh, so they do have to go buy something.
They have to buy something, yes. But if they...
So if they... Wait.
So like they could click on the Cool School, for instance. Yes. They don't have to buy the Cool School, but if from that page they then go do whatever they were regularly shopping for, and then whatever they eventually buy, we get a kickback because I don't know.
Well, what do you mean? How much?
That's a small percentage, but
a penny, 5 cents.
It depends on how much they spend. It's a percentage.
Oh, so if you spend $1 million on Amazon,
exactly,
we would get
$10.
Somebody please go do that. So anyway, I would love $10.
So that helps us. We are eventually planning to set up a tip jar once we have our website up and running. But in the meantime, this will do. Also, tell your friends about the podcast. I think our most effective way of building our audience has just been sheer word of mouth. So,
yeah, pretty much.
You know, share it with folks. Send people the links. Talk about it.
Yeah, when we post this on Facebook, you all should all be... sharing it on Facebook. You should be sharing. Yes.
And a lot of people have been doing that, and I appreciate it. So more of that, please. Oh, and one last thing. The pre-sale is not up yet, and we'll let you know when it is. But Dave White has a new book coming out.
Okay, don't get excited. It's coming out in 2013.
Yes.
Not next week.
No.
Not 2 months from now. Not even 4 months from now, okay? In 2013, sometime, my new book will come out. You cannot pre-order it right now. This is just an announcement. I announced it on Facebook this week. My new book, it's called Keep It Heavy, Man.
A collection of essays.
It's a collection of stories, essays, whatever. In 2013.
All right. I'm just announcing.
Just relax.
Whetting their appetite.
Just calm down.
For the eventual thing that is happening. So, So more on that, obviously, as we get closer to it, as it becomes more of a thing. But it's on, it's happening, and it's very exciting. So we thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
More milk and more sugar. Goodbye.